Be part 58 of our Acts Bible study, and the title of it, of course, is Paul Before Festus. And we're going to look at the entire chapter 25 of Acts, Acts chapter 25, and we'll go over them verse by verse. Last week, we covered all of chapter 24, which, of course, detailed Paul's trial before Felix, the governor. We saw the Jews could not make a good case against Paul. They brought many accusations against him, as the Bible tells us, but they could prove none of them. And so Felix could not move on doing anything to Paul. However, he did arrest him, keep him arrested. He kept him under house arrest for two more years. During those 2 years, there's not a lot said about what Paul did during those 2 years. Now, there are some folks that believe, if you're like me, you believe that Paul wrote the book of Hebrews. And if that be the case, it possibly he could have wrote the book of Hebrews during these 2 years. Some believe that perhaps he was conversing with Luke on the things that's written in the book of Acts, through all the things that occurred to him. And perhaps he spent those 2 years remembering and giving his memoirs to Luke on everything that happened in the ministry. Some believe he may have wrote other books of the Bible. But we don't really know. The Bible doesn't say this is what Paul did during his time. Now, we do know that he did, in cases like tonight, we're going to see that he does share the gospel with people and the things of the Lord. But it almost seems like Paul is being held back at this time. I mean, 2 years. 2 years for a man like Paul that's used to just going and going and going. This had to be kind of tough for him. But last week, as we finished up in chapter 24, we saw that Felix had been replaced by a new governor, Porcius Festus. And what happened there, history tells us what happened to Felix. Because of his unwillingness to prosecute Paul and to turn him back over to the Jews, they complained about Felix. And they complained to Nero, who was, of course, the emperor of Rome at the time. And Nero recalled him from that position. And when they recalled a governor in those days, it usually did not end well for them. However, Felix had a brother that was high up in the court system that protected him. And so he didn't face any prosecution or anything over the complaints from the Jews. But he was removed from office. And he was replaced by this man, Porcius Festus. Now, a lot is not known about Festus, not a whole lot about him. History gives us a little bit. Josephus, the Jewish historian, gives us an account of Festus, and he had good things to say about the man. He didn't have very good things to say about Felix at all. Felix was a pretty bad governor and man. But Festus, he didn't really have a lot of bad things to say. He actually spoke well of Festus. And he tells us that Festus was only serving as governor for 2 years before he passed away. And so he wasn't in the position very long. And so tonight, as we pick up here in chapter 25 with verse 1, we'll see that Festus has now came into his administration as governor. Verse 1 of Acts 25, the Bible says, "Now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem." All right, so when Festus begins his governorship of Judea, he doesn't waste any time of going straight to the capital city of Jerusalem. His palace, his home, is in Caesarea. That's where the governors lived, in the governor's palace. That's the same palace that Felix lived in. That's where Festus is going to spend most of his time. But he's only there, he just comes there, and it says after 3 days, he leaves there and ascends. Notice that word ascended. From Caesarea to Jerusalem. That word ascended means he went up. When you see Jerusalem mentioned in the Bible, you're either going up to Jerusalem, ascending, or you're descending, going down from Jerusalem. Jerusalem sets up higher. And when the Bible talks about it, it's always talking about going up to it. And I always find that fascinating. But here we're going to see, and if you look back, I believe in chapter 24, it talked about Ananias the high priest. It says in verse 1 of chapter 24, "After 5 days, Ananias the high priest descended with the elders and with a certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul." And we know they descended from Jerusalem to Caesarea. And so always keep in mind of that. When you hear that ascending up to Jerusalem, that's because Jerusalem is up. And so Felix after, or Festus, I'm sorry, I'll get those two names mixed up tonight, I guarantee you. But Festus, I like that name Festus. We used to have a cat we named Festus. But now we named him after the deputy Festus Hagen off of Gunsmoke, my dad's favorite television show when I was a young man. Festus Hagen, who's Ken Curtis, was also a very good singer, by the way, and sung with the Sons of Pioneers. Just a little trivia for you. But I like that name, Festus. And I'll get it mixed up, though, with Felix. Verse 2 says, "Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him, and desired favor against him that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him." 2 years has passed by. Paul's been sitting there locked up in the palace. He was allowed to have visitors. But for 2 years, these people have been stewing over Felix not doing anything about Paul. They wanted to kill Paul. They hated Paul. And so for 2 whole years, that's all they've thought about, how they're going to get rid of Paul. Well, a new governor comes and they think, here is our shot. This new guy comes. He probably don't know anything about Paul. We'll just go ahead and have him bring Paul over to Jerusalem because of, you know, the charges we want to charge against him. And when he does, we're gonna jump on him. We're gonna kill him. I wonder if it's the same 40 certain Jews that the Bible talked about last time that were gonna lay in wait for him when the chief captain was gonna bring him out. Remember, they were gonna fool the chief captain to bring him out to so they could talk more to Paul. And when they did, they were gonna attack him and kill him. I wonder if it's the same certain Jews, but. Regardless, they're still stewing and mad over Paul being kept alive, and so they think they've got a new shot at killing him. So they're up to their old tricks again. They're going to tell a lie to get Paul out in the open and attack him and kill him. Verse 4. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea and that he himself would depart shortly thither. So Festus isn't quite the pushover that they'd hoped for. He has probably heard a few things about the Jews, and no doubt he has, and kind of how they are. And so he's ready for anything like this. Now, he wants his governorship, his administration to be the best because he knows what's just happened to Felix. He knows that Felix was recalled and there was trouble with the Jews over them. So he wants to keep the Jews happy, but yet he is not going to be a pushover. He still is in charge. He's a Roman governor. And so he has got to follow the rules of Rome, but he also has to be a friend of the Jews to keep them from being angry at him all the time like they were Felix. And so he answers them and says, no, Paul is going to stay at Caesarea. And I'm not going to be here much longer here with you in Jerusalem. I'm going to go back to Caesarea shortly. And thither, he says. And then we see in the next verse, he invites them to come with him. It says in verse 5, "Let them therefore," said he, "which among you are able to go down with me," there to give, is again, he's coming from Jerusalem down to Caesarea. Notice Luke mentions that, "go down with me," "and accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him." So he invites any of these Jews that want to come along with him as he goes back to Caesarea to come on along and we'll have another trial. And then you can make your accusations there and I'll listen to them. And just see if there's anything wrong with this Paul. He says that there being wickedness in him. That would have been whatever it had been. If he broke laws or if he whatever. And so he invites them all to come with him. He's, again, trying to please these Jews. Verse 6. "And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down unto Caesarea. And the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought." Okay, so Festus hangs around Jerusalem for about 10 days, and then he heads back down to Caesarea. And, as we see from our next verse that's coming up, those Jews took him up on his offer. Many of them came with him so that they could participate in the trial and give their accusations again, their lies again. They lied. Last time, they're going to lie again. And so the very next day after Festus comes back to Caesarea, he doesn't waste any time. The very next day, he holds a trial for Paul. And he makes Paul come out and sit on the judgment seat to be tried again. So verse 7 there, we see that they came with him. Verse 7, "And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. Here we go again. So many of them came there with him, and they were laying these grievous complaints, and many of them. It's the same complaints they made back in chapter 24, in verses 5 and 6. Here's their complaints. For we have found this man a pestilent fellow, and a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who also has gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and would have judged according to our law. So just like last time, they throw these wild accusations out against Paul again. The Bible says, which they could not prove. They could not prove them last time with Felix. They can't prove them this time with Festus. So they're just kind of spinning their wheels here, hoping that Festus is either gullible enough to believe what they're saying, or to not care enough, or want to please them enough, that he'll go ahead and allow Paul to be taken by them. But they can't prove anything against him. Verse 8. While he answered for himself, meaning Paul, again, gave his own defense, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. And just like last time, Paul stands up, defends himself, proves he didn't do anything that they've accused him of. They can't prove it. You can't prove it, because it didn't happen. And I'm sure he went through the same routine as he did with Felix. I was only there for a few days. It's been 12 days now, and you've not heard any uprising. Six of those days I spent in the temple purifying myself. So these Jews are all making these things up. You can't prove any of these things. And so he protects himself again, or defends himself. He knows the kind of trouble here that these Jews have caused with Felix. And Festus don't want this same thing to be happen to in his administration. And verse 8, look at verse 8. It says, while he answered, okay, we read that. Verse 9, I'm sorry. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me? Again, Festus is wanting to stay on the good side of the Jews. And so here he's already heard the proof. They can't prove it. He knows it. He knows they can't prove it. Paul knows it. Everybody knows it. But yet, to please men, Festus is asking Paul, would you be willing to go now to Jerusalem and stand before the court again in Jerusalem? Silly question. He knows, like I said, he knows the trouble that these Jews cause for Felix. He don't want that happening in his administration. So if he can pull this off, he's probably going to be okay, probably, he thinks. So he asked Paul, would he be willing to go and stand trial there? Now we get a glimpse kind of man that Festus was. While Josephus may not have found anything wrong with the man, I find here in the Bible some things wrong with Festus. He would rather please these men than do what's right. Now, the right thing to do is to say, Paul is not guilty of any of these, and we're going to let him go today. But he's not going to do that. He's going to do the wrong thing and try to be a man pleaser. And it reminds me much of what Pilate did when Jesus was put on trial, and Pilate found nothing wrong in this man. He said, I find nothing wrong. And he even went and did that little washing his hands, like I've washed my hands of the matter. But yet he still allowed them to crucify Jesus. So he was rather to please the Jews than to do the right thing. Now, he knew better. Pilate knew better. This man knows better, but yet they don't care. Of course, these people don't have Jesus in their heart. And that's what you'll find. You'll find people in this life that's just like this. That's over offices, that's over a judicial system, that's in the courts, and they don't have the Lord in their heart, and so therefore they're not going to do what is right. They're going to do what is going to benefit them or to please somebody else. There's a lot of crooked things that go on in the court system even today because of this. All right, verse 10 says, then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, and thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof they accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. So Paul isn't going to let the Jews have their way. He knows what's going to happen. If he lets them have their way and he goes to Jerusalem, they're going to kill him. He knows that. And he is a Roman citizen. He don't have to go there. And I love what he said to Festus. He says, as thou very well knowest. So he kind of rebukes Festus right there in front of everybody. Look here, governor. You're supposed to be the one keeping the law and doing things the right way. And you're wanting a Roman citizen to go with the Jews to be heard on a trial after I've already appealed to Caesar? And so, you know, he kind of calls Festus out on that. Now, Festus, I'm sure, turned three shades of red at this time, embarrassed to death because he knows he's in the wrong. And Paul even tells him, he says, look, if you can prove any of these things that I'm worthy of death, I will gladly die over this. I'll do that. Because he knows that he's not guilty of any of it. So he appeals to Caesar. Now some people say, well, now, wouldn't the Lord have protected Paul if he'd went to Jerusalem? Well, probably he would have. Of course, he told Paul that he would be going to Rome. So we know that no matter where he went, the Lord would watch over him so he could get to Rome. But the Lord also gives us some common sense to use, you know. And Paul is certainly no fool here, and he's going to do things the way they need to be done. Verse 12. Now, by the way, when he appeals to Caesar, that's like appealing to the Supreme Court. If you have a trial here in our local court system and you don't like the outcome, you can appeal, in certain cases, you can appeal to the Supreme Court to get the Supreme Court's decision. Now, it's got to be something big if you're going to do that. That is the final say. If the Supreme Court says, you know, we ruled on this, then that's it. That's what Caesar's court's like, the Supreme Court of our land. It's the highest court in the land. And his word is it. Verse 12. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go. So Festus discusses these things with his council. This is not the Jews he discussed it with. It's his Roman council, those in the court system that work for him. And I can only imagine what they discussed. I'm sure it was not much because he knows what he's got to do here. He can't go against Roman law. If he does, he's in trouble. And so they discussed it there amongst themselves, probably just a show of discussion, you know. Festus probably said, there's nothing I can do about it. We've got to send him to Rome. And but I'm sure Festus is now eager to get Paul out of his hair. If he can get Paul out of his hair and out of his jurisdiction, that's the good thing for him, because then he can't offend the Jews with Paul, and he can't do anything against Rome. As long as he just sends him off to Caesar, then everything will be fine. So I'm sure he's glad to get rid of him. But he doesn't immediately hand him over yet. And he's going to be there just for a little bit longer. Verse 13. And after certain days, and that's what I'm saying, he was there just a little while longer, not sure quite yet how long, but certain days he's there, because then here comes King Agrippa. Verse 13. And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came unto Caesarea to salute Festus. All right, now this is the Jewish royalty that's come now into town. No doubt they came there to, of course, greet Festus, to meet the new governor. You know, that's the way they would do, the kings and things. Before they can transport Paul to Rome to stand before Caesar, Agrippa comes, and with his sister, this is his sister, Bernice. They show up here in Caesarea. Now, this Agrippa right here is King Agrippa II. Now, we're familiar with his dad, King Agrippa I. We read about him in Acts chapter 12. Remember, he was the one that had James beheaded? And then he went down and had this big festival, and the people said that he is like a god, and he took all of God's glory for everything. And the Lord sent an angel and immediately smote him. And he fell down and was eaten up by worms. Now, that was this guy's dad. And Bernice's dad, too. Or Bernice. My wife's middle name is Bernice, and it's spelled just like that. So whether it's Bernice or Bernice, you choose. But I may say either one. But this is Herod, or not Herod Agrippa. His dad was Herod Agrippa. And so he comes from kind of a bad family. And this woman that's with him is his sister. Now, this is a weird relationship that these two have. She is also considered the queen. and he is the king, but now he's only a puppet king. He has no real authority or power. The Romans only allowed him to keep the title of king just to please the Jews. He didn't have any power here in Caesarea. He had no power over Paul or this trial at all. It's just going kind of through the motions to make him feel good about himself because he's this so-called royalty. This Bernice or Bernice is his sister, is also the daughter of Herod Agrippa. She was married, by the time she was 20 years old, she'd been married three times. This woman got around. But as bad as it is to say, history verifies this from several accounts, that her and Agrippa, her brother, had incestuous relationships throughout their entire life. They were inseparable. That's what you find every time, even in history or even in the Bible, they're together. And it was not a good relationship. And she served alongside her brother there. And she was also the sister to Drusilla. Remember Drusilla? The wife of Felix? She was her sister. And so kind of a weird family thing going on here between all these people. One thing you need to understand about Agrippa, like I said, he is a puppet king. He was given a little jurisdiction in the land there. He didn't take over right after his father did. He actually took over from his uncle, Philip. And so they gave him just a few areas of land, I believe Galatia and some other areas. And he didn't really have much power, but he liked to really feel that he was very powerful. And the Romans allowed him to keep the title of king. All right, verse 14. And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause unto the king, saying, There's a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. To whom I answered, It is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die, before that he which is accused have the accusers face to face, and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him. And it's not entirely clear why Felix decided to relay all this story about Paul to Agrippa here. It's not like that Agrippa's really going to be able to do anything about the situation. I'm sure Felix is just being kind of buddy-buddy with this king, trying to, you know, butter him up, to have good relationships with the Jews so that they're in good standing with each other and stay on good sides. Probably it impressed Agrippa that Felix came to him with this information. He felt important because of it and confided in him. And in verse 17, he tells what happens there. Verse 17, Therefore, when they were come hither without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth, against whom, when the accuser stood up, they brought none accusation of such things as I supposed, but had certain questions against him of their own superstition, and of one Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved under the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. So Festus fills him in on all the details of the trial, the accusations, Paul's appeal to Caesar, and all this stuff. So he gives him the whole rundown of everything. They must have run out of things to talk about. So now he's telling him all about this. Now, notice that Festus right here calls Caesar Augustus. Now, we've all heard that name over and over, Caesar Augustus. Caesar Augustus. This is not the common name for the man, the emperor of Rome. That's not his name. These are titles and salutations of the emperor. Augustus here, the emperor's name, by the way, at this time is actually Nero. That's his name. It's Nero, his given name. But the honorable description that's given here of Augustus, it means a revered one or the worshipped one. So that's what Augustus means. It's kind of a, you're saying something good about the man. You worship him or you revere him very much. So he uses that name, Augustus. And then the title of Caesar, it's kind of like our title of president. That's not his name. His name's not Caesar. We eat Little Caesar's pizza. But his name's not Caesar. That's his title. That's his position as the emperor over Rome. They're called Caesars, and they were called that ever since Julius Caesar, and they all of them, the next few, were called Caesars. Now, Nero is his given name, so you could look at it like this. His name could be called Nero, his given name, Caesar, supreme ruler, and Augustus, the revered one. And so let me give you just a little bit more about him. His real actual name, all of his name, is this. It is Nero Claudius Caesar Augustus Germanicus. How'd you like to have that name? I don't think they could fit that on your driver's license, but that's his whole name. Verse 22. Then Agrippa said unto Festus, I would also hear the man myself tomorrow. Said he, thou shalt hear him. Okay, so Festus agrees to let Agrippa hear him too. And Agrippa decides he wants to hear Paul. And Festus gladly allows him to do it. Verse 23. And on the morrow when Agrippa was come, and Bernice with great pomp and was entered into the place of hearing with the chief captains and the principal men of the city, at Festus's commandment, Paul was brought forth. So they make this big show of coming to see Paul. It says with great pomp. You've heard that phrase, pomp and circumstance, when you're marching into the graduation ceremony. They do the pomp and circumstance. This is a great show. It's usually, you know, people playing instruments and marching and a heralder and everything else. And here comes the king and the queen, and they're marching up there and they're making a big show of it, probably wearing his purple garments and everything else, you know, showing his royalty. And they come in to see Paul, making this gaudy parade out of this. And these people were gaudy. And it's this kind of attention that Agrippa craved. Paul did not legally have to even show up for this trial. He's a Roman citizen. He didn't have to do it. But it says that Festus commanded that Paul be brought forth. So I guess they were going to drag him there against his will if he didn't want to go. But he didn't really have to lawfully. He'd already appealed to Caesar, and being a Roman citizen, he didn't have to allow this to go on. He could have refused, but he comes, and of course we all know why Paul come, right? If you don't know why Paul showed up to this trial when he didn't have to, then you've not been paying attention this whole study. Paul comes here because now he has somebody else that is high up here to be able to tell him about Jesus. That was Paul's whole desire in life, was to share the gospel and to tell people about Jesus. Now he's got this king, Agrippa, that he gets to share the gospel with. And so I'm sure Paul is delighted to come and tell his testimony again. And that's what's going to happen. We'll read about it next week. And so Paul comes, and he's going to do some preaching. Verse 24. And Festus said, King Agrippa and all men which are here present with us, ye see this man about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. Well, Festus is really pouring it on thick, isn't he? I mean, here's this Paul, and everybody wants him dead. They've been crying out about him the whole time I've been here. And he describes how all these Jews were, you know, so upset over it. They want him killed. Verse 25. But when I found that he committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself had appealed to Augustus, I determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. Wherefore I brought him forth before you, and especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination had I might have somewhat to write. For it seemeth to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him. And so we find the reason that Festus tells Agrippa that he's allowed this to go on is so that he could get maybe a little better understanding. Since you're here, King, most royal man, since you're here and you're going to hear this and I can hear the conversation take place, then I can come up with a letter that I need to send to Caesar as to why we're sending Paul there, because I don't have anything right now. And I got to send some excuse, and so I believe I can find something here when I set in on this one. And it's kind of silly, but he knows Paul's not done anything wrong. He's not broken any Roman laws, and he already two trials, and he's not broken any Jewish laws. They've not proved anything against him. He's going to go to Rome regardless, and so he says, "I need to find something to find some kind of crime to put down that he's done, so I can send it to Caesar." And we'll pick up on this next Tuesday, Lord willing, and we'll get to.